Now, it's time for Wayne Brittenden's Counterpoint. This weekend, the so-called Millions Against Monsanto demonstrations are taking place in towns and cities in over 40 countries, including New Zealand. The protests are essentially against the economic and political power of the GM, genetically modified seed companies, and the alleged lack of independent analysis of the risks and benefits of biotech agriculture. Some 15 years ago, in the UK's independent newspaper, Wayne broke the story of the development of the Terminator seed and its implications for agriculture. There's since been a moratorium on that product, but international public unease over GM crops in general seems to be increasing, despite the GM industry's well-advertised insistence that it's on the side of humanity. That's Wayne's theme this morning. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning, Chris. The corporate case that GM agriculture will feed the world's hungry is odd, given that their Terminator seed meant that peasant farmers would be driven to the wall by being forced to buy new seeds every year. And Monsanto hasn't historically been greatly on the side of humanity either, with its now banned carcinogenic PCBs and distribution of the notorious defoliant Agent Orange for use in the Vietnam War. An unexpected beneficiary of this weekend's Millions Against Monsanto might be DuPont and other rival companies, comfortably out of the spotlight, but in the GM business, although Monsanto's in it much more deeply. The health and environmental arguments are pretty well known, but GM's effectiveness in raising crop yields hasn't come under so much independent scrutiny. The US, on the one hand, has gone out for genetically modified crops. Western Europe hasn't. It's an ideal comparison because they're both in the same hemisphere, similar weather patterns and economic circumstances, so let's look at how they fared. Corn is America's signature crop. Between 1961 and 1985, the US greatly out-yielded Europe. After 1985, the story changes. The US adopted GM for the vast majority of its corn, and Western Europe didn't. Both of them increased their yields, but the European increase greatly outpaced America's, indicating that it's all about breeding, not GM. While most of the American farmers were hampered by the restrictions of the GM corporations, the Europeans were free to innovate, work with small businesses, improve the soil, and so on. It's exactly the same story with rapeseed. Neither the US nor Europe has GM wheat. Western Europe's wheat yields are better than ever, but wheat yield increases are declining in the US. How come? American farmers rely on a type of biotech package that's compatible with genetic modification, and that's hampering non-GM wheat yields as well. This new rigorously peer-reviewed analysis is about to be published in the prestigious International Journal of Agricultural Sustainability. So, an important question in New Zealand has to be why we're opting for the American model rather than the way more successful European one. For a start, successive New Zealand governments have ploughed astronomical amounts into GM. Despite any new unfavourable evidence, that investment has to be reinforced, public unrest calmed, good GM news conveyed, even though it may come from what are effectively corporate PR releases. New Zealand's come some way with GM labelling, but there are a number of exemptions and almost certainly more modifications to come in the form of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. The trans certainly doesn't stand for transparent. If you're a scientist, you'll know that you're far more likely to get public funding if you're dealing with positive applications of GM farming than if you're researching its fundamental worth. And that's it. The biotech corporations, Monsanto in particular, have pushed their way into university research labs, farmers' fields, high-level government policy-making bodies, and on dinner tables. In the US, the revolving doors have reached a giddying speed. Corporations controlling our essential crops, potentially undermining food security, just isn't logical. It's ideological. Genetic engineering as a research tool is clearly invaluable, but not for the commercialization and control of food and crops. This weekend's worldwide demonstrations may go some way to remind compliant governments that their responsibility is to ensure that Monsanto is safe for the public, not that the public's safe for Monsanto.
Thank you, Wayne. Now, to talk about this, I have two guests. Zach Caldevere, who's a spokesman for the US Organic Consumers Association and a keynote speaker at the demonstration in San Francisco. And in Christchurch, Jack Heineman, Professor of Molecular Biology and Biodiversity at the University of Canterbury. He's also part of a technical expert group for the UN Conventional on the UN Convention on Biodiversity. And Jack's one of the authors of the about-to-be-published report that Wayne mentioned. Thank you both for your time. Can I come to you first, Zach? Do the biotech lobbyists really have the level of power that Wayne suggests they do?
Well, I think it's hard to argue that they don't, because regardless of the issue, I mean, for instance, just a couple days ago, Senator Bernie Sanders out of Vermont, along with Senator Barbara Boxer out of California, put an amendment into our farm bill that all it would have done is simply say that if states choose to label foods with genetically modified organisms in them, then the states have the right to do that. That's all it does, nothing radical. It only received 27 votes in the Senate. Yeah. So if that doesn't tell you the power of biotech over our politics, I don't know what does. I mean, we're talking about an industry that has spent about $500 million in the last 12 years lobbying and campaign contributions to elected officials, and they've got a stranglehold on our political process. I mean, I worked on Prop 37 here in California, which would have labeled genetically modified foods just in our state. And the six biggest pesticide corporations in the world alone spent $20 million just to defeat this initiative. So if it's not control over our legislators and our legislative branches, then they do it through advertising basically stifling any kind of direct democracy efforts by the people.
How high is the level of public awareness of all of this and expressed public disquiet?
Well, I think the good news is there's an awareness starting to grow in our country. Now, the bad news is we're starting from a very low point, and I can speak to this directly from Prop 37. I remember we were looking at the first polling where if you ask people, do you want to have a label on food if it's been genetically modified, 90% say yes. But then when you ask them questions like, do you know what genetically modified food is? Do you know what Monsanto is? You're starting to get into the 17, 15, 13% area. So we're far behind a lot of countries in terms of an understanding of what this the biotech industry is, what they're about, their history. But I think that's starting to change. Prop 37 in California last year really started a dialogue, and we're seeing this now in states across our country. You know, Vermont's legislative branch just passed a labeling initiative. Washington is putting forth a ballot initiative very similar to Prop 37 that's looking very good. Same thing with Connecticut. And you see these Millions Against Monsanto rallies, the one I was at today. There is a growing understanding among people that there is something really deeply wrong with a food system that is owned, operated, and controlled and monopolized by chemical companies that care about profit, not human beings, and certainly not the planet.
Yeah. But GM farming is so well established now in the United States that how easy is it really going to be to turn the tide? The genie is out of the bottle, isn't it?
Well, you know, it is. So I don't think there's an easy answer to that question, but every year we have these giant farm bills that are loaded with different subsidies, incentives, that basically incentivize the kind of diet that we're eating in America. So incentivizing these giant crops of genetically modified corn that then goes to feed our factory farming system. I mean, you get into the cyclical nature, which is self-destructive, but there are so many things in each farm bill that we can do that could at least start to move us in the right direction. So, for instance, stop subsidizing big agribusiness, start subsidizing sustainable farming, start allowing industrial hemp production. There's a whole list of things that can be done that we could start to do slowly but surely to turn the tide. Whether we will ever get to the place that I'd like to see us get to, that's obviously an open question. But there are things that we can do that will greatly help consumers and small farmers.
Well, thanks for that. That's Zach Caldevier. Now, Jack Heinemann, is it, as Wayne says, all about breeding?
Good morning, Chris. It is about breeding and management. So it's a combination of working with the best adapted germplasm for your area and your soils, and also having chosen a way to grow it that is best at reducing external inputs.
Yeah. I mean, I'm confused by this difference between Europe and the United States in terms of yields, as against non-GM and GM. How hard is all that evidence?
I think the evidence is quite hard. It's internationally available. It can be looked at on the FAO, the United Nations Food and Agricultural website. They have 50 years of statistical data on yields in different crops in different places. And if you look at this very carefully, what you find is that the U.S. has always been a powerhouse as a producer of corn. And it used to outstrip the world, both in absolute production, which it still does, but also in yields, the amount you get per area. But in the last 20 years, that lead has been eroding. It corresponds quite closely with an ever more intensive biotechnology package that is chosen in the United States, to the point now where the trend lines show very clearly that Western Europe is not only on average producing more per area, they are projected to continue to increase that differential relative to the United States.
Yeah. Wayne seems to be suggesting that the science doesn't really much matter for us, that we're going for GM crops almost regardless of this. There's a sort of immutability about that. What's your response?
I don't think anything's immutable. I think that the current situation we're in is clearly a product of powerful economic and legislative forces. And those forces can change. So the way in which governments are attempting to cause innovation in agriculture, particularly big governments like the United States, is not producing both a high yield and sustainable agriculture. Tweaking our incentive system for agriculture by changing innovation policies, changing the way in which we describe our intellectual property instruments, can make dramatic changes in the kind of agriculture we could get in the future.
So this is the way to go.
I think so. And I think it's I think it'll be a challenge in the near term. As the international assessments on agriculture have shown, we have to move developed countries, external input intensive, high yield agriculture to sustainable agriculture. And we have to work with developing countries to also transition them from high-damage traditional agriculture to low-damage, high-yield agriculture. The pathways for those are clearly mapped out by the international assessments.
Yeah.
We just have to have the will of governments. And the will of governments is strongly attached to the will of consumers. So if consumers in wealthy countries start to demand food that is produced sustainably, the market should respond.
Where is the research going to take us on all this? I mean, there's been so much research into GM farming in recent years. We're sort of overwhelmed with it in many respects. Do we now know enough about the risks and the benefits without having to undertake further and almost endless analysis?
Well, I as a scientist, there's always the desire to know more and to know it better. So I would not close the door to further research. But the research has to be done in a different way. It has to be done with a level playing field. Governments such as New Zealand's government, Australia, the U.S., European governments have to reinvest again in an independent scientific resource so researchers can have the ability to see clear career pathways that don't involve them ever having to become entangled with industry. Those pathways are extremely rare in today's world. And that means that we have these debates because we never get any kind of clear research, either of the benefits or of the potentials for harm.
How invasive is the industry in our research in this country now? How much of a stranglehold does the industry actually have?
Well, it depends on what industry you're talking about. But if you're talking about things like, specifically, companies like Monsanto, DuPont, Dow, Syngenta, the only way to really answer that question is to have universities and Crown Research Institutes open their books to see what kind of deals that were made, how many exchanges of licenses were exchanged between them, and what obligations they have. But clearly, what's happened in New Zealand, certainly over the last 10 to 15 years, is the government has put on a tremendous amount of emphasis on public researchers being seen to be industry friendly. And more of the research funding in this country, like other similar countries, is being tied to short-term economic goals of prevailingly most powerful industries.
So the universities and other research institutes really need to flex their muscles on this. Rather difficult to do.
It's very difficult to do, but it's actually the public who has to flex their muscles.
Uh-huh.
Universities and Crown Research Institutes, as powerful as they are as scientific centers, are not very powerful as political centers.
Yeah.
And if the political machine changes its mind on how it does agriculture, how it wants to do agriculture, then these other institutions can respond.
Do we need our own national regulatory agency, independent of Australia?
In food safety, you're talking about?
Yeah.
I believe we do. I think that it's a very strange and rare experiment for a country to have ceded its food sovereignty to another country on this particular issue. So Food Standards Australia and New Zealand makes effectively, not officially, but effectively, the decision on food safety for us when it comes to novel foods like GMOs. And in doing that, our own capacity to challenge them atrophies. So I think it's very important that we retake that ground and build that capacity in New Zealand.
Yeah. There's a job to be done. Thank you for that. I've been talking to Zach Caldevier, the spokesperson for the US Organic Consumers Association, and Jack Heinemann, Professor of Molecular Biology and Biodiversity at the University of Canterbury.